Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It started out with just his content. Obviously, now his network has ballooned where there are people, there's like an army of people making content that lives totally independently of him and his team, like influencers who are holding events or concerts or, you know, the Hot Girls for Zohran phenomenon where there's a club for every identity group, like Hot Gays for Zohran.
Olivia, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what made you want to cover Zohran Mamdani in the first place? You were pretty early to writing about him.
Gosh, I think it's probably just the fact that I am a social media user. And the moment you come across his content, you know, as someone who covers politics pretty regularly, I feel like two kinds of candidates. Well, he was just a new kind of candidate, actually, entirely, from what I was seeing, where the only candidates who are that lively in New York City are like Paperboy Prince or whatever that guy's name is. Like, you know what I mean? But Zohran was equally as lively, had a huge digital footprint, and was doing something that was kind of funny, that was kind of cheeky, but was also very serious. And I could tell that it was really resonating with people. Like, I guess what really happened was I saw people I know sharing some of his posts.
And were they sharing posts about policy and the free bus rides and the government-run grocery stores, or were they sharing videos from influencers who were endorsing him?
It started out with just his content. Obviously, now his network has ballooned where there are people, there's like an army of people making content that lives totally independently of him and his team, like influencers who are holding events or concerts or, you know, the Hot Girls for Zohran phenomenon where there's a club for every identity group, like Hot Gays for Zohran. So that is more of a recent development, but I think it began with people. I remember people sharing he did some pretty clever stuff around Valentine's Day to encourage New Yorkers to switch their registration to Democrat, because obviously the concern there was that he comes from the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. And I think he was figuring, you know, some people in my network might be socialists who aren't registered as Democrats yet. And the cutoff was like months ago. And that was his first big campaign that I remember going viral, was trying to get socialists or, you know, independents registered as Democrats so that they could vote for him in the primary.
And his base is tremendously big. Tell me about what sort of role did unpaid volunteer canvassers play in this election? It seemed like Cuomo perhaps did not have many, and of the canvassers that he did have, they were paid.
Yeah, there's really like, there's not that much more to say to it other than Zohran, leading up to election day for the primaries, he was holding canvassing events like every weekend and then, you know, a few times throughout the week. Sometimes there were multiple canvassing events. Actually, often there were multiple canvassing events happening on the same day in different parts of the city that he wouldn't even go to. And I attended some of these events, and you really got the sense that young people were there because, yes, it was a politically or ideologically important mission for them, but also because they kind of felt like it was fun. I got the sense that there were girls there who were like kind of there to meet, you know, a fellow.
It was a dating event.
What was that?
It was a dating event.
Yeah, it was kind of like a mixer where, you know, people would put on their finest Doc Martens and stomp into the park, and so. Yeah, Cuomo obviously like really struggled to recreate that enthusiasm. And towards maybe in the last month before the primary, he had, or it was actually, it was his super PAC, Fix the City. They had tried to roll out some canvassing and a volunteer operation that it wasn't all paid, but a lot of it was paid help, which is quite a difference than young people spending like a glorious Saturday or Sunday, you know, knocking on doors for you.
Right. And I think we'll get into the policies and what Zoran has said in just a bit, but there's no denying that he ran almost a flawless campaign and Cuomo did not run a good one, probably one of the worst in recent memory. So did you view this as a rejection of Cuomo, or was this more of a fluke?
I think,
or an endorsement.
I think
Zoran.
It's both. So I remember the day after Zoran won, because it was called election night in Zoran's favor, which surprised everyone.
Right,
I think
everyone
it surprised,
thought it would take until July.
They were like, "This could take weeks." And then
by 10:30, Cuomo had conceded.
Yeah, the victory was so just undeniable that Cuomo conceded, exactly like you said, that very night. But yeah, this momentum, I think that it was not, I think it was not a rejection of Cuomo so much as it was support of Zoran. I mean, there were, you know, maybe it's like Brooklyn Brownstone, the kind of no kings voter type, where they are probably more of an anti-Cuomo voter. But this was really support for Zoran. And I remember seeing that after Election Day, I watched what Morning Joe had to say about it. And they said something like, Cuomo, he just wasn't out there enough. Zoran, he was all over the city, which is exactly what they said about Kamala, that Kamala didn't have enough time to get out in front of voters. And that is a completely incorrect assessment. This was really like no level of exposure. Cuomo's social media page was a reflection of who he is. I'm sorry to this man. I don't know if he's a boomer, but it was boomer energy. Okay. And it was not it because it's a real reflection of like who he is. And so it's not that voters didn't get enough exposure to him. They saw him. They understood what he was offering, and they chose Zoran.
And I would also add that this was a ranked choice
right.
election. It ended up not meaning all that much, but you did see towards the end Zoran using the system effectively,
totally.
Teaming up with Brad
totally.
Lander.
And yeah, Brad Lander, exactly. And you saw Brad Lander. I mean, I think that Brad, obviously, I'm sure, really wanted to be mayor. But I think he saw, you know, this wasn't going to happen. And I think he sees this probably as a career defining gesture to go all in on Zoran. And I assume if Zoran wins, like he is expected to in the general, that Brad Lander will probably become a really important part of his administration and probably help ensure that Zoran, who would be the first socialist mayor of New York City, is a success.
And in your first piece on Zoran, you reported on and wrote about what he has said publicly about Israel. Can you just fill our listeners in on his views on Israel and what he has said in the past?
Yeah. So Zoran has said that Israel is actually, and really Palestine, is the reason, is what motivated him to even get into politics in the first place. It's really the first issue I can find that he becomes completely fascinated with and captivated by. And so when he's a student at Bowdoin College in Maine, somewhere, it's unclear what year it was, it might have been 2012, 2013, but he founds or co-founds his school's chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine. And from what I can tell, Zoran is really just, I think that there's little daylight between what he believes and the average member of the Columbia encampment, the anti-Israel encampment at Columbia University believes. It's a very academic approach based on his understanding of human rights. And he's of the belief that dismantling the world's only Jewish state would actually be a really compassionate, and this is actually a really progressive mindset. And so he believes a lot of the boilerplate beliefs, like that Israel is an apartheid state. I have found instances of him referring to Israel's war against Hamas as a genocide. And one of his only pieces of legislation in the state assembly was this bill that would prevent nonprofits and synagogues, any sort of entity in New York that where money was ultimately being sent to settlers in the West Bank. So this is a defining issue for him.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When he was asked in the debate where he would travel to first, most people on that stage, in terms of foreign countries, most people on that stage said Israel.
Right.
But he said he wants to stay in New York.
Which and honestly was kind of a good
answer. It was
answer.
A good answer.
Yeah.
A mayor who would take care of his citizens and prioritize them. Tell me about some of the policies that he's run on. Free buses, government-run grocery stores. What are the ones that have resonated most with voters?
I just want to say I think it's a good answer because a lot of voters, especially voters who are really excited about Zohran, say, well, why does it matter? You know, is he running to be mayor of Tel Aviv? Well, I would say that this actually matters because anti-Semitism is rising nationally. But in New York City, there are a lot of kind of interesting flare-ups where you have to decide, is it veering into anti-Semitism? Like, for example, you know, he says he wants to increase hate crimes prevention funding by 800%, but what good is that if you don't consider it anti-Semitic? You know, if someone targets someone with like a Jewish star necklace on and rips it off and calls them like a dirty Zionist, like, can you claim to, you know, would he consider that in a political protest against Zionism? So anyway, I just want to add that, yes, it was a great answer. It obviously resonates with the voters of New York, many of whom feel like, why is this relevant? You know, his position on Israel. But as I just mentioned with his bill in the state assembly, like, he is a believer in BDS, the divestment movement from Israel. And so I could just see this being more relevant than many voters assume. But his policies, you want to get into which...
Well actually, before we get to policies, I just want to go back to this. His views on this stuff perhaps were informed by his father, who is a professor at Columbia University and is one of the most prominent professors believing in anti-Zionism views, right?
His father, Mahmoud Mamdani, is, I think you could fairly say, a giant in the field of anti-Zionist studies, but really his specialty is post-colonial studies, where he's written a lot on settler colonialism, argues that there's no, you know, finer example of this than Israel. And he's very critical of the West, makes comparisons between America and Nazi Germany based on how we treated Native Americans. And so I've actually interviewed his father maybe a month after October 7th in 2023.
And his mother is a famous filmmaker.
Right. Mira Nair, she is an award-winning director who I think in a lot of posh households is probably a household name. She directed Monsoon Wedding.
And he had a rap scene in one of her movies, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was a Disney movie, Queen of Katye. I don't know how you say that, but it's a Disney movie. There were some stars in it, and Zohran, he served as, I believe it was the assistant music director, and within that role, he created this song from alongside his childhood best friend, who he grew up with in his early childhood in Uganda, and they become this music duo and start making songs together. And one of them gets into his mother's film, which ends up being a huge platform for it. The song is actually quite successful and ends up airing on MTV's network within Africa. And so it's an interesting chapter in his history.
And so fast forward to now, he's now a politician, and he has these policies, $30 minimum wage,
right,
free buses, free childcare, rent freeze. Which ones resonated with voters the most?
I would say I heard a lot about the rent freeze. A lot about the rent freeze and the free buses. I think maybe because those are the most jargony, like.
But can these happen?
Great question. So most economists say that these are completely, you know, that these are horrible ideas that actually would end up raising rents and ultimately harming minorities and hurting the housing crisis, because it would disincentivize builders and the real estate industry from building new properties if there's a cap on how much they can make in return.
But also, the New York City mayor is not the king. Wouldn't he need?
Right. That's a whole nother element, which is that these rent increases are controlled by a board that the mayor does appoint but does not control. So, you know, he could much like how presidents make Supreme Court appointments based on sometimes what their abortion politics may be, and everyone cries foul. Well, that is what Zohran would want to do based on his appointments to this rent guidelines board, hoping that, you know, they would grant a rent freeze.
There's been a mini scandal in the last few days. You referenced that he was born in Uganda.
Right.
When he applied to Columbia University, it turns out, this came out in Hack Materials, he said that he was African-American or identified as African-American.
It was Black or African-American, which I think is important because, yeah, so like you mentioned, when he was applying to Columbia University, where his father is a professor, and sadly, he still was not accepted, but he selected that he was both Black or African-American and Asian, which technically is all true. As you said, he was born in Uganda. So I, you know, by my definition, that does make him African-American. And the Asian part refers to his Indian heritage. Both of his parents are Indians who were living in Uganda. So this has been a huge scandal, though, because it taps into the sense that Zohran perhaps plays up certain parts of his identity or is not being honest about the fact that, of course, he is a minority, but a very, very privileged one. You know, he's lived a very posh, elite lifestyle. And I think that is why that story got so much buzz, is because there's this sense that he presents himself. I have found instances in which he says, you know, I, like most people in my district, pay more than half of my income towards my rent, which is true. But I'm sure his parents could chip in, you know, if he couldn't make rent. And so I think that's why that story went so viral, is because there's a sense that perhaps he's not being fully honest always about his upbringing and where he comes from.
And so we have a long way to go until November. The winner of that race will be whoever wins the plurality of votes. It's no longer a ranked choice system. Cuomo presumably will still be on the ballot. Adams is running and on the ballot. Curtis Sliwa will be on the ballot. New York City has had Republican mayors before, Rudy Giuliani, At one point, Michael Bloomberg identified as a Republican. Do you think there's a shot that Sliwa can win, that there will be a divide of Democratic votes amongst Cuomo, Adams, and Mamdani, which could mean that Sliwa could get the most amount of votes?
I don't think so, because that would mean that I just don't see him getting more support than Zohran as it stands right now. I could see him certainly getting a larger share of the vote than he would normally.
But even if the Democratic Party is split amongst three candidates?
Okay, so I think what is more likely to happen is that moderate voters will be split between
And Adams.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Cuomo and will be split between Cuomo and Adams, and then maybe also split between Curtis Sliwa. But I think that ultimately the Curtis Sliwa voters were, I don't see Curtis Sliwa stealing that many voters from Cuomo and Adams, if that makes sense. I think that these are kind of different groups of voters. And I think that a lot of New York City voters actually don't have the aversion to socialism that maybe we hoped for. And so I don't know that Curtis Sliwa is going to attract that many voters away from Cuomo and Adams. I see it drawing votes away from Mamdani, but I still see him probably gaining the most momentum.
And Mamdani voters tacitly endorsed a socialist agenda. Who are Mamdani voters? What did we see in the data?
So the data is kind of mixed, but the stereotypical Mamdani voter is wealthy, white, probably lives in Brooklyn or maybe gentrifying parts of Queens like Astoria, maybe Ridgewood, and probably makes over $100,000. It's actually a little more complicated than that. Like, you know, there are immigrant communities, especially Muslim communities, that did support Mamdani. And there even is a Mamdani or a Trump to Mamdani voter. So I would say he actually has a really diverse coalition.
Isn't it pretty? It's pretty fascinating. And I mean, it's really different than AOC and Bernie, just in the sense of, as you said, this coalition that he put together as a Democratic Socialist is unlike other Democratic Socialist coalitions. It is more diverse.
And right, so, right.
And so I'm wondering, you know, what can Democrats learn from this race? Do you think that in primaries across the country, we'll see more Democratic Socialists running?
What can Democrats learn about this race? I think that for me, one thing that is striking about Zohran is that he's very positive. Like the things he's, you know, Bernie, I think, really captivated Americans in a post-Occupy Wall Street moment in which there was a lot of anger to what he was saying. You know, he was talking about the 1%. And Zohran, it's interesting because he's not really, yes, his policies, he has, I think he said recently straight up, like, you know, he is anti-billionaire, I think you could say, and very critical of the business community. And yet that is not necessarily that's not hurting him. I actually think it's helping him because he portrays it in a positive way, where what he's focusing on is a sense of justice. Redistribution without saying he's focusing on the positives, not the fact that this redistribution is going to harm the business community, at least if you ask the business community. So I think they can learn a lot from, I guess what the lesson is maybe that countering Trump's MAGA movement and populism, I guess populism on the left will be less angry, if that makes sense. Like, they really hope. It has the feeling of a Barack Obama hope.
Hope, right. And yeah, providing economic relief and building policies around that. Do you think that a Democratic Socialist can win in the middle of the country? Or is this unique to
Interesting. And I guess it will be interesting to see how he affiliates with the DSA going forward. You know, if you go far back enough, he doesn't usually call himself a democratic socialist. He usually just calls himself a socialist. Now he calls himself a democratic socialist. And so I'm not sure, you know, will that classic thing happen if he does come into power? Will that classic thing happen where he moderates? There are people saying that even AOC is moderating now. So could he win votes in middle America? Who knows, man? Anything is possible, because the main lesson I remember leading up to Election Day, I really felt like Zohran was going to win, just because the chatter was so similar to 2016, where we all thought, oh my gosh, there's no way Trump is going to win. He's not serious. The donors will never give to him. All of the chatter was exactly the same. And yet he tapped into something so real. He understood the voters before the political establishment had caught up. So who knows what Zohran knows? Maybe there is a democratic socialist appetite in Iowa.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And a big part of his base, or not a big part, but a meaningful part of his base, actually were Jewish Americans.
Right.
And so I'm curious what this race tells you about the generational divide
amongst
Jews. He's someone who has expressed anti-Israel views, but he found a lot of support amongst Jewish Americans.
Yeah. So that's a very interesting phenomenon, where polling shows that something like, you know, a fifth of Jewish New Yorkers supported Zohran. And most of the Jewish New Yorkers I've met who support him, they're definitely Reform Jews. And they come from usually a prep school, like a fancy high school. They usually went to a fancy college. That is, if there is a so the stereotypical Zohran voter is white, Brooklynite, college educated, makes over $100,000. If you are also Jewish, like the proportion of which those other things are likely to be true is like through the roof, because a lot of the Jewish supporters I've met who support Zohran are definitely part of a fancy kind of intellectual circle, in which, by my estimation, their ties to the social justice world and it is so much stronger than their ties to Judaism at this point. But they still identify as Jews. I'm not going to say they're not Jewish. They certainly say that they are and feel that way, and yet they support a radically anti-Israel candidate. Because I think that these are people for whom they buy the belief that anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism are completely distinct phenomenons.
And along those lines, what has he, I've seen reporting that's been confusing. What has he said about the phrase globalize the Intifada?
He basically just won't condemn it. He usually says, well, it's not language I would use, but there are many people who understand that phrase to be a call for equality. He's essentially, he pushes back on the grounds that the Intifada is directly a call to kill Jews. Sorry, this is going to like tank your YouTube search results. They're going to block this. But, you know, he pushes back against this, the translation of he usually challenges the concept of what does the word Intifada mean? Like, he knows that people are offended by it, and yet he feels like it's a more flexible term than literally killing Jews. Like, it could be a call for equality, for example.
And has his wife, who's the potential first lady, expressed any views publicly?
No.
Anything?
You know, I don't think she has given an official interview yet.
She's 27, right?
Yeah, she's kind of gorgeous. She's pretty chic. She's an illustrator who I believe is Syrian born. I think they met on Hinge. And she makes a lot of, seems very inspired by the suffering of the Palestinians, and draws a lot of art that I think is appropriately, well, it's usually, it is about the plight of Palestinians, but there are, you know, some more like anti-Israel artworks in there too. It's an important cause to her also, and I'm sure they bond over it.
And what are you going to do moving forward? I can't imagine Zoran is going to give you an interview, but you'll still report on this New York City mayoral race.
Well, I call his people a lot, you know. I think I just put in another request last night.
Do they respond to you?
You know, I would say for every 7 to 10 times I reach out, I do get one response. So they are responding occasionally. But what comes next? There are a lot of little threads that I am excited to follow up on. People from his past that I'm going to give a call. There's still a lot of digging to be done. So if you have any tips, my email is olivia@thefp.com. Shoot me a line if there's anything you know.
Well, Olivia, thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to reading more of your reporting.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.